This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. The markets are closed. Don't go to the mailbox either. And that's okay. I mean, it is still cold out there. But, hey, let's warm up with a President's Day edition of AgriTalk.
From the recalcitrant snow-covered plains via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. In this edition, we'll talk with John Linder, president of the National Corn Growers Association, Jerry Bone, president of National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and in addition, the Farm Journal cowboy himself, Greg Henderson from Grovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, were you ever the president of anything?
My 4-H club, actually. Yeah. For 1 year.
Yeah.
Yes, I was.
One term. Yep, I'm going to take that one, too. I'm going to claim president of my 4-H club. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't think I can put anything else on the list. You know, I've been on church council, but I wasn't the president of the church council.
Well, sure. I mean, yeah.
What church would have a president?
You know. Well, seems weird.
Somebody's got to call the meetings to order.
I am the president of the church.
Oh, my goodness. So, cold weekend, still cold out there.
Burr.
Yeah.
Recalcitrant. Yeah. Was the word that I used, right. Because it sounds a little bit like calcified, which it's not.
Right.
It basically is just resistant, you know, insolent.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Weird.
It just goes on and on.
Yeah. I got to know, did you get any feedback on your Valentine's Day suggestions?
No. Awfully quiet.
None?
Awfully quiet.
You mean nobody took your suggestion for hot peppers or anything like that?
I'm assuming that it worked so well that they had yet to emerge from the snow igloo. I'm just assuming it's still going on, and God bless you. I hope that's the case.
I'll bet that is it. No doubt about it. Yep, the old two-person igloos out there. Oh, my gosh. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, I do know this. I have not solved my turkey feeding issues yet.
That could be a problem.
I'm still dealing with that. Yep.
Because, I mean, just giving bird feed away. They're not just giving that stuff away.
No, they don't. And, you know, when you start going through about 40 pounds a week, you start thinking, hey, maybe I need to do something about this. All right, man, let's get to it. What you got in the news today? No markets, they're closed, but we've still got some updates.
Well, wheat futures ended last week on a strong note, but in reality, Chip, March soft red wheat posted an inside trading day with a low range open and a high range close. That means the front month SRW contract posted three sessions with a lower daily high. Chart watchers are quick to point out that support near 625 in March soft red was reinforced last week. Russia expected to initiate export taxes on wheat today. How Russia applies the tax will be a major driver for the wheat market this week. July hard red winter wheat 6¼ cents higher, 625¾. July soft red up 1¾ cents, 630. September spring wheat 1/4 cent lower on Friday, 641¼. Chip.
Yeah, watching the European market very, very closely this week, watching the supplies coming out of the Black Sea, no question there. Since climbing above 6¼ in March SRW futures, we've spiked down to it three times now. Big moves, big, quick moves. It's becoming a level where selling is being rejected at that price level. So should be good, solid support for us this week. Now, on the week, last week, we had July SRW futures lost just 2 cents. July HRW futures lost 5½ cents. September spring wheat futures lost 3¾ cents.
Not a bad week then.
No.
At the end of last week, USDA reported daily corn export sales to Costa Rica and Guatemala. Both buyers are traditional buyers of U.S. corn, but purchases by these two countries are usually not qualifying for the daily reporting. That started chatter in the corn market last week that USDA's corn export estimate of 2.6 billion bushels is not only too low, but that it might actually be way too low. March corn futures this week posted a new contract high on Tuesday ahead of that S&D report. That's last week. March corn futures 2 1/4 cents lower, 538 3/4. May corn up 3 1/4 on Friday, 536 1/2. December corn closed at 448 3/4, down 3 3/4 cents. Chip.
Yeah, yeah, that move to the contract high last Tuesday ahead of the report. Boy, the momentum was really pushing hard to the upside going into that S&D, and then we get that 2.6 billion bushels. There is a lot of concern out there that they way undershot that corn export number and that it's going to have to come in higher. March corn last week down 9 3/4 cents. D's contract down just 3 cents.
Well, after volatility ramped up in the soybean market in the first half of last week, it was drained out of the market on Friday, with March futures trading in just a 15-cent range. March soybean futures also traded to a new February high and to a new February low last week before bouncing to close mid-range for the month. Traders this week will be watching weather forecasts in South America very closely for an indication of when new crop beans might begin to flow to the market. March bean futures 4 1/2 cents higher, 1372. May beans gained 4 1/2 to close at 1371 1/4. November bean futures closed at 1173 on Friday, down 1¢ 1/4. Chip?
Yeah, beans got a positive supply and demand report last week, and it was reflected in the way that the markets acted or traded last week. March contract up 5 1/4 cents, the November contract up 12 cents. So the bear spread worked. But the move in the new crop, the November contract, it really smells of the acreage battle that and beans, the bean market's realization that, hey, we got to do something to get some more acres here for 2021.
Cotton futures had a very good price performance last week, setting the stage for follow-through buying this week. March cotton was 86 points higher on Friday at 87.27. December cotton firmed 11 points to 83.89. Chip?
Yeah, and on the week, the March contract, are you ready for this? It was a big move. Up 453 points.
Oh,
yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, that's a 5.47% increase in value in 1 week, and we're within range of that 90 handle in the cotton now. So a
almost
big
sounds
move,
like a
big
market
move.
Trying to buy acres there a little bit.
Yeah, it does.
It?
Yep.
February live cattle up 187 1/2 on Friday, 117.20. April cattle up 205 to close at 125.17 1/2. March feeders $1.70 higher, 140.85. Chip, the cash market will determine if live cattle can build on those gains this week.
Definitely.
And on the snout side, April lean hog futures sharply higher last week on ideas China will remain a big time buyer of pork in the year ahead. On Friday, February lean hogs 2 1/2 cents lower, $74 on the snout. April hogs gained 95 cents to close at 85.20. Chip.
Right, right. Okay, yeah. April cattle last week up $1.40. It's a good thing we got that move on Friday that we got to close higher on the week, but up $1.40 on the week for April live cattle. March feeder cattle up 257.5. And drum roll, please. April lean hogs up $4.90. That tops the gainers for the ag markets last week, up 6.1%. I mean, I thought cotton had it in the bag with that 5.5% increase, and then here comes hogs with a 6.1% increase. So 6.1. Big move there, big move. Lots of concern about the diseases that are developing in China. There's no question about that. All right, happy President's Day, everybody. Go buy a mattress. And we'll be back with our President's Day edition of AgriTalk in just a moment. You know weeds can impact potential corn yields, but how do you measure it? I'm joined today by Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, tell us a little bit about the relationship between weeds and yields.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chip. Essentially, immediately after you plant, your corn's yield potential is at its absolute highest. And then you start to get these environmental stressors immediately after you plant that reduce that yield potential. So higher yield potential really starts with early season weed control. because once the weed emerges, it steals vital nutrients and water, among other things that are needed for corn growth and grain fill.
Okay, so these weeds that emerge with the corn plant, how does it impact the health of the plant?
Well, early season weeds fundamentally alter corn growth, health, and eventually its potential yield. So weeds present at corn emergence are an immediate source of stress and cause corn to enact a series of defensive measures. These will include things like corn stalks growing taller and leaves growing wider, and that's to better compete for sunlight. The corn leaves grow parallel to the row versus out into the row to avoid competing directly for sunlight. All of these things are really irreversible, and they're going to have a negative impact on the yield overall.
Okay, so for corn growers that are looking to control those tough weeds, maximize yield potential, what herbicide do you recommend?
Only Acuron corn herbicide unlocks your full yield potential because it controls those tough weeds other products are missing. And when applied pre-emergent and at a full labeled use rate, replicated Syngenta and University trials show Acuron out-yields competitors by 5 to 15 bushels an acre.
Excellent, Steve. Thank you. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try the online calculator at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to the second hour of AgriTalk on this President's Day. Normally, we'd have an analyst on. We'd talk about what's going on in the markets, what they see going forward. But since it's President's Day, I want to do something just a little bit different. We're going to be talking with the president of the National Corn Growers Association up in the next segment. We're going to be talking with the president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. And we're going to get their take on what they think of the first few days of President Biden's administration. So joining us right now, John Linder, president of the National Corn Growers Association. John, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Doing well, Chip. Thanks for having me on. I'm really, really glad that you're not asking me for market analysis at this point. I seem to lost that quarter got away from me. I'm not sure where it's at.
Gotcha. You know, the markets, though, John, the corn market, It has obviously been a topic that we have talked a lot about with producers on AgriTalk, just simply because of the change in attitude among corn growers and soybean growers out there, John. It's a lot different situation right now than what it was in the middle of the summer of 2020, isn't it?
Oh, you know, you're absolutely right. We coined a study with the University of Illinois and to look at the impact of COVID on our clear back in our 2019 crop, because a lot of it wasn't even marketed by the time the pandemic hit. And so it's looking kind of bleak as you looked into 2022, but thankfully the phase one, you know, we're hearing a lot of shortfall comments, and boy, if they actually reach those committed targets in 2022, we better be really diligent in our production practices and raise a good crop. So what an opportunity to have be able to project some kind of return in 22. Yep. And you thought, well, what will we do, right?
Right. Oh, absolutely. It's a much better feel situation than what we were in a few months ago. John, you know, on trade issues, during the Trump administration, you could turn on any business network and trade was almost a constant running story on the networks and in the news cycle. Now, all of a sudden, yeah, if you're involved in the markets, you're talking about trade and this wonderful export demand that we've got for corn. But outside of that, it feels like trade issues have almost become a back burner issue. Are you getting that feeling?
You know, flipping the page when you elect a new administration definitely can change the conversation rather quickly. And this one did, without a doubt. We entered into conversations around renegotiating NAFTA. And fortunately, we landed that well. There's some implementation things that really need to take place. But trade, obviously, that's near and dear to us. We partner with U.S. Grains Council. We have great staff, great relationships with USTR and the folks at USDA. So we get trade. They get us. They understand what a great working relationship we have and the value we can bring together. So, yeah, that trade conversation never stops. That we don't turn that light off when we go to bed because the world's still awake thinking about buying corn from the U.S. But certainly that's not top of mind in D.C. as far as Congress. They seem to be a bit distracted at this point. We'll wait for them to help us figure out where they're at so we can actually insert ourselves in the proper places, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. John, I know that you've got to be excited when we talk about the Biden administration and their focus on environmental issues. The message that we are getting from the ethanol industry, that we're getting about ethanol and how it can be part of the climate solution that the Biden administration is looking for. I've not been as optimistic about the ethanol industry going forward as I am right now. It's been 2-3 years since I've had this level of optimism, John. It's kind of exciting.
Well, you know, it really is. I don't want to sound negative when I say that, but, you know, maybe we should be happy to have indigestion. it's interesting. It's like being on the new frontier. So, you know, USDA, obviously with the incoming Tom Vilsack, Mr. Regan, incoming as director of EPA, both of kind of been singing our song. They're ready to have these conversations and figure out how we can follow the letter of the law and under the implementation of the RFS and try to find those places to showcase biofuels. And when you talk about renewable in a climate conversation, you've got everybody's attention. So, yes, Chip, you're right. What an opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. It goes back to a line that I heard you say a couple of months ago, John. The new ethanol for corn could be ethanol and the higher blends of ethanol. And the higher blends, talk about that, John, and there's some programs that are being forwarded now that are going to help with to bring those higher blends to the market.
You know, on our side, the effort really focuses around the Next Generation's Fuels Act, and it was great to have it reintroduced in the previous Congress and begin those conversations. And as we look at reintroducing that into the current Congress, timing could be of the essence. We really have an opportunity here to really take that conversation to the next level and really be able to showcase the environmental advantages of corn production when it's utilized in renewable corn ethanol as an energy source, and to get a capture a bigger portion of that fuel tank is tremendously important to not only the environment but to the farm gate stability. So it's so easy to speak to that, furthermore, it's an opportunity to showcase what that fuel can do with smaller engines, lighter cars, less emissions, less consumption per mile. So you get the double impact from that as far as environmental influence, while still opening up the opportunity to grind more corn. But we don't get a lot of traction and a lot of credit for the great environmental stewardship that farmers have practiced for years. It's a continuum. Dad, 50 years ago, I can recall, put setbacks from the waterways and the drainage ditches, you know, to put 20 feet on either side and keep it clean. Those structures are still in place today, and I was riding a bicycle down them as a kid. That's how long, you know, but that's what's ingrained in us. Do it right. Yep. Take care of what you have, because it'll last for your lifetime and the next generation as well. So this is a really unique opportunity to showcase what corn production and farmers do. You know, programs on infrastructure is a great piece for this too, because we really need to be able to deliver the products, obviously, and that's been a success story as well. 60,000 new pumps that can handle E25 and higher blends. You know, there's a lot of opportunity in what we've been doing to advance our efforts as we go forward.
Right. Absolutely. This a lot of opportunity, and that's the bottom line here. And that's one of the cool thing about this, John. One of the cool things about this is it's a homegrown opportunity. It's a domestic opportunity. It's not relying on the what can be a very unpredictable export market. It's homegrown, it's domestic, and it's got the feel-good side to it, doesn't it?
No, it really does. You know, I can't say that you wouldn't find a farmer out there that couldn't tell you, let's not forget what the RFS did in the fact that we brought domestic stability to the liquid fuels market for the United States, and we became independent where we were beholden to other countries. And so what a great story, and it's a clean story, it's a green story, and it's gotten better. I mean, USDA saying a couple of years ago corn ethanol emits 43% fewer greenhouse gas emissions. Here just recently we got a new study from Harvard and Tufts that suggests the number is 46%. That just solidifies, you know, not a lot of time span between those, but it just solidifies what a great untold story there is in the benefits of corn renewable ethanol.
Absolutely.
Doesn't get any better, like you said, when it's generated here in our states and we can deliver.
Yep. John, you've got an exciting time in front of you. I don't think there's any question about that. And ethanol is going to be an important part of it. We still got some roadblocks or some potholes that we need to get around on this thing, but it looks really bright. Thank you, John. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Chip. Take care.
You bet. John Lender, President, NCGA. We'll be back with Jerry Bone, President of NCBA, next. Hey, everybody. Chip Flory here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online. And I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com. It's time for headline news, but there was no Pro Farmer First Thing today this morning, so how about this? It's President's Day, the markets are closed, and I'm making my way to Nashville for Top Producer Summit. There are going to be real, live people at TPS, and we're going to be responsible and follow all the protocols, but we are going to network and visit and really, really talk, like face-to-face and everything. Some are saying it will be nice to get back to normal. I don't think we're going back to anything. TPS is a hybrid event, a much-scaled-back live event with content gathered that will be available at the virtual event that's coming next week. This is what I think farm events will be going forward. Hybrid happenings that will make the interaction and information available to many, many more growers that might not have the time or the resources or the want to travel too far from the home base. And I, for one, am all for it. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Get off my plane.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody, on this President's Day 2021. We are continuing our presidential coverage here, and we've got the president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association with us, Jerry Bone. Jerry, welcome back to AgriTalk. It's good to talk with you again.
Thanks, Chip. It's good to be with you all, and we appreciate all that AgriTalk does to promote the livestock industry.
Excellent. Love to hear that, and we love to do it, Jerry. It seems weird to say that you're the new president at NCBA, but I mean, you just wrapped up the winter meeting, and the reason that I say that is it's weird to say that is because you've been pretty committed to the beef industry for a long, long time at state, local, national level, and here you are, the new president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. How's it feel?
Well, I'm honored and excited, you know, to lead this great association. You know, it's as I told our board last week, you know, for a kid that grew up in a little bitty town in the Kansas Flint Hills, it's quite an honor to be able to represent this great association in the coming year.
Yeah. Yeah. You spent a lot of time at Pratt Feeders, still involved there. I know that. And you still feed cattle on your own, don't you?
Yes, I do. In fact, I've got cattle going out this week, and I'm glad they're going out because the weather's so rotten that we'll get them processed.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, the guys have been moving up there, moving up or moving back, one of the two, depending on if they were spring or fall calvers. But there's more and more guys that are calving early in the year. Those guys have got to be dealing with some real tough situations out there right now, Jerry.
Yes, it's going to be ugly here in the next few days, and I feel for those guys that are having to do that. Hopefully they've got some facilities and can take some steps to help mitigate this weather.
Yeah, no fun. Okay, let's go down your priority list. There's some specific issues that I want to get to, but I want to hear what your priority list looks like first. What's right at the top?
Okay, you know, our board last week approved a strategic plan for NCBA for the year that, you know, that myself and the leadership, the officer leadership team and the staff are asked to carry out and execute. You know, first we want to lead well. We want to be recognized as the trusted leader and the definitive voice of the U.S. cattle and beef industry. And you know, protecting producer profitability probably comes up pretty quick there.
Sure.
You know, what can we do to help keep a business climate that's conducive for our producers? And you know, we've been fighting COVID and all of that stuff, and we got to get through that. And hopefully, as we go through the year, we can get some recovery and get that behind us. The cattle market's been obviously a contentious thing for quite some time, ever since 2019 with the Holcomb fire, and continued here through all of 20. And so, you know, I've been heavily involved in that, and we've got a working group that's still working on that, and that's ongoing. We've helped foster some legislation in Congress to assist small locker plants and processing plants to get some funding to ramp up their inspections so that maybe they can ship beef and meat across state lines. There's also a law that we were proposing. It's called the Basic Act, that's going to be introduced, that would get some funding maybe to encourage some new construction, even of some local processing plants. And that'll certainly go a long way in helping producers. You know, we want to continue to work on expanding broadband internet access in rural areas. That would certainly be beneficial. Labeling, meat labeling, still a concern. And the government's got quite a few process verified programs right now that are available that can, I think, address the labeling and process verified things that consumers are wanting. So we're going to continue to push those. Sustainability and climate, you know, with this administration, that's front and center. And, you know, the beef industry's gotten beat up for way too long about that we're a polluter. And we want to change the narrative on that and promote what we do well. You know, our members manage and operate thousands and millions of acres of land that sequester carbon already.
Yeah.
And I think we need to get that story out. And I think there might even be some opportunities for an income stream because of that at some point.
Sure.
You know, and I think point out, too, that we're producing the same amount of beef here in 2021 that we did in 1975 with 30% less cows.
Sure.
And so that has a positive impact there. And two, our animal's an upcycler. We utilize 90% of the food that they eat is products that humans can't consume, and we turn it into a high-quality protein product that's the center of the plate. So.
Man,
that's a couple things, and I think
a couple
viable
things.
Traceability.
That's quite a list. As a matter of fact, Jerry, the reason that I chuckled a little bit when you got to sustainability and climate is because you just went right down the issues that I've got on the list that I wanted to talk with you about, too. So, and then you've added a couple of things, and there's one other one that I want to get to before we wrap up, Jerry. But let's go back to the market transparency. And like you said, you go back to 2019 and the Holcomb fire and the issues that were created there. Ever since then, it's been doggone hard to move the money down the supply chain back to the feed yard. And the Packers, I don't begrudge Packers for making money. They should make money. But they've been holding on to a bigger and bigger chunk of it, it feels like. Jerry, what do we do to move some of those Packer profits down the supply chain? Heck, get it all the way to the cow-calf guy.
Well, I think over time that's going to happen. But, you know, we haven't had the leverage here. Backed up cattle during the Holcomb fire. And then when we finally get out from under that, and then immediately we go into COVID-19 and where all the plants shut down. And, you know, we backed up over 1 million head of cattle.
Yeah.
Through the summer, plus they were much heavier than what they would have typically been too, and I think we're still feeling the impact of that. We really got a little bit of a supply imbalance here, and we're in the process of addressing that. And I wouldn't be surprised here if in another month or 6 weeks that this fed cattle market will look considerably different and probably better than it has been here for the past year. So I think it's a work in progress. I think what I mentioned about trying to get a few more of these locker plants going and help take the supply burden off of the big guys will help too.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that it's going to take a legislative action to bring the transparency to get some of the results, or do we just need to give it time and let the market work it out?
Well, I hope we don't have to go to the legislative route. Certainly there's a certain portion of our industry that would like to see that, but it's our hope that the industry can work through this issue on its own and get this situation under control. We've got a working group that's been working on that, and we're not done, but we are making some slow progress, I think. And
I think
as time goes on, we can address that.
Yeah. Well, Jerry, I'll tell you this. I don't know if I've ever seen any legislation on anything get completely free of unintended consequences. And that's what concerns me if we start running some legislation into the cattle market, that there's going to be those unintended consequences. And those will be difficult to deal with as well.
Certainly true.
Yeah, the sale of meat products across state lines by some of these local locker plants out there, Jerry, that feels like that is what so many cattlemen are looking for and as part of the solution to what's going on out there, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is. And, you know, there's also a couple of smaller plants, you know, bigger than a locker plant. I think there's a plant in Idaho that's being planned that'll process 500 head a day. Yep. I believe there might be one in Wisconsin also. So, you know, if we can get two or three or four of those going, that helps too pretty quickly.
You bet it would. President Biden's Buy America plan, it's brought up some rumblings that that mandatory country of origin labeling is going to be brought up again. What's your take there?
You know, we're for voluntary country of origin labeling. I mentioned earlier some of the process verified programs that are already available through AMS. And, you know, those are market-driven things that we can do that will address that concern. You know, obviously we have a WTO problem if we go back to what we had in 2015. So unless we can find a way to get around that, I don't think that's going to be a real viable option going forward.
Right, right. Okay, and then on the sustainability, climate change issues, we've got the cattle industry has a good story to tell. Dr. Frank Mintlerner over at UC Davis has been telling it for a while. Can we make progress on that in 2021, Jerry?
We intend to make progress on that. You know,
good.
We're part of the U.S. Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. We're going to continue to work with them as well as the Global Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. But we're also going to ramp that up in our as a priority for NCBA.
Good.
You know, we got lots of other things to do too, but addressing that, and like I say, changing the narrative and telling what we do, you know, proving what we do that's positive for the environment. There's a measure of methane that it's called GWP star. That's global warming potential. That's a new way of measuring methane, and methane's a lot different than carbon because methane is only in the atmosphere for about 10 years. So, you know, as it leaves the atmosphere, obviously we're adding to it, but it doesn't grow over time like carbon does.
Exactly. Exactly. We've only got about 30 seconds left here, Jerry. I'm just going to leave it with this. Good luck to you. Keep putting a quality product in the meat case and on the plate, guys, because man, oh man, it feels like we've made such advancements on the quality of beef over the last decade that we can't let that go. Thanks for what you're doing, Jerry.
You bet. Thanks for having us, Chip.
You bet. That is Jerry Bone, 2021 NCBA president.
Let us constantly proclaim to all people our belief in God and our devotion to the ideals and causes that spring from such belief. For you, and for me, and for our children, the cause we support is that of freedom, the right of each of us to live and work and speak and worship according to the dictates of his conscience.
Welcome back to this President's Day edition of AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. And we went full President's Day on you this afternoon. John Linder, president of the National Corn Growers Association, just wrapped up a great conversation with Jerry Bone, the new president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. I don't know if our next guest is a president of anything or not, but I'm sure glad that he's here, and I'm president of his fan club. Greg Anderson from Drovers is with us. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great, Chip. Thank you for having me.
You bet. You bet. So in the conversation with Jerry, we obviously talked some about market transparency, and we talked about the fire, the Holcomb fire, and we talked about the disruption from COVID and the restaurant shutdown, food service shutdown, and so on. But there are things that are happening in the market all the time, and some of them are kind of hard to believe. And Greg, you've been doing a bang up job covering what is happening up in the PNW with the Easter Day ranches. Tell us about it, and don't leave anything out. Start at the beginning on this.
Okay, so what we know, this originally started when Tyson made a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, and this was in early December. And they have to make those filings because they're a publicly traded company. Mm-hmm. Basically, they're saying, they said at that time that there was $225 million worth of cattle unaccounted for in their accounting. And they attributed that to a beef supplier that they were doing business with. No names were mentioned. We knew from that there would be lawsuits ensuing.
Yeah.
So Tyson filed the first lawsuit in January against Easter Day Farms, Easter Day Ranches. There is an Easter Day Farms as well. It's a large family business, maybe 25,000 acres of potatoes and cattle and crops, and encompasses a lot in the eastern mm-hmm. Washington. May have as many as 400 employees, but they also do business with other stocker operators, you know, cattlemen in that region. So there's a lot of people involved here. Mm-hmm. What Tyson has alleged in their lawsuit is that Easter Day Ranches were submitting false invoices to the tune of about $200 million over the past 4 years that Tyson paid for. So apparently they had an agreement with Tyson where Easter Day would buy cattle and put them on feed. And, you know, I don't know the exact, but Tyson was either financing them or whatever and financing the feed. And Easter Day, apparently, according to Tyson, admitted that he lost money in the equities markets and was trying to cover it with filing these false documents. All of this is alleged in court proceedings. So, then we get, there's a bankruptcy court that Easter Day Ranches has filed for bankruptcy.
Okay.
And then Easter Day Farms this week filed for bankruptcy. One of those hearings, Tyson has accused Easter Day of having a fire sale of one of their feedlots. And what they call the North Lot was sold to A&B Livestock, which is a division of Agribeef, which is a competitor of Tyson's. They run a smaller bagging plant up there. Again, alleged in court, Tyson said that they that Easter Day sold that feedlot for $16 million and that they diverted the funds not to the creditors but to the Easter Day family and Easter Day Farms, and that sale took place just days before the bankruptcy filing. So this is an all, large entangled thing whenever you talk about, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that, you know, there's a lot of moving parts here.
It's hundreds of millions of dollars and 200,000 cattle, right?
Yes. Supposedly there was 200,000 cattle in these, you know, that never existed.
Yeah.
That Tyson had to, you know, make amends on their books for, but they never actually existed. They were paid for, but they were never fed or slaughtered or whatever.
Over what period of time are we talking, Greg?
Over a four-year period of time.
Okay. So it's conceivable that that they could have had that many cattle, over that four-year period, they just didn't. That's just seems unbelievable to me.
It's stunning.
Yeah,
the only way to put
there you
it,
go.
Is that, you know, it's stunning that you could, you know, could get away with that for 4 years, and
right.
That Tyson would, I mean, I would guess that somebody's head's going to roll there because you know, you got to count better than that.
You know, the other thing that I'm sitting here thinking is, did this ever show up like in a cattle cattle inventory, cattle on feed report, as compared to actual slaughter numbers? If there wasn't some kind of signal there.
No, I think it's the number. While the number is large for an individual, I think it's too small over a four-year period of time. You know, we're talking about 50,000 head.
Yeah.
For 1 year, that's not going to drastically impact any of those reports.
Okay.
The impact on our industry.
Yeah.
In the
real quick.
West.
Okay.
You know where those people are, and other people that do business with Easter Day are involved.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be tough for them to get through up there. Greg, thanks for filling us in, buddy. I really appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, Chip.
You bet. That's Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Hey, come back tomorrow for AgriTalk. We'll be live at Top Producer Summit down in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.